This is Dirt and Sprague.
You know how fast you were going?
What?
How fast you were going?
65.
63.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
You got to understand that I don't come up with this stuff. I just forward it along. You wouldn't arrest a guy who's just delivering drugs from one guy to another.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Oh, yeah, you can milk anything with nipples.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan. Before we get to all the dealings, Dirt's giggling over there. Makes me wonder if there's a text that you want to read.
Harley said, I felt this way too last night. My Knicks Oilers parlay sure looked great last night until the last period and quarter.
Yeah. Feeling great. Felt bad for those people,
feeling
actually.
Feeling good.
Want to remind you that Tuesday, June 24th, your local Toyota dealers presents the 11th annual. Yes. Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farm.
That was a wayward tee shot from Jason Swigard.
Yes, it was. Brought to you by Henderson and Daughter Windows and Doors and Philbrook Law Accident and Injury Lawyers. Once again, we'll have Victor Rico's breakfast burritos, lunch. We'll have Matt's barbecue on hand, lunch, dinner. Foursomes can be purchased at 1080thefan.com. Click on the Fan Golf Classic logo.
It's so far a masterpiece, if I do say so myself.
And that's what we say at the Fan. It's a masterpiece.
We'll talk with Ben Beacon coming up of Locked On Wolves at 7:15. Game two, pretty pivotal.
Live up to the hype, man. Game one sucked. Game one in the East was awesome last night. Deliver for me, damn it.
Well, so I thought you were going to go Ann Edwards. Live up to
the
hype.
Oh, Ann Edwards too, yeah. Just I want the game to be good. I mean, you know how I feel about OKC. I'm definitely rooting for Minnesota. Can I get a good game that comes out of the wire, please?
I mean, I think the Pacers could go up 2-0, and I'm still going to say that series is still live.
Yeah, could go either way.
Thunder go up 2-0, that series is over.
Ooh, over tonight. Must win for the T-Wolves tonight, according to Brandon Sprague.
You don't believe so?
They go home, so what if they win Game 3 and Game 4?
I just have a hard—I guess what I would say is I have a hard—
Just thinking, would you go the other way in the East? Because the Knicks would be down 0-2 if they lose Game 2, both games at home, and having to go to Indiana.
The Knicks are in a weird spot where they've been the underdog, or they at least felt like the underdog, and they thrived there, and now they're not, and it's like, oh, they didn't win.
They favored for the first time. Yeah.
They were the Pacers in the last round against the Celtics.
They were.
How are they down 20 and now going to win? That went the other way on them. If the Wolves lose, I'm just trying to play the math here. That deep and talented a team of the Thunder.
Not easy to win 4 out of 5.
Are going to lose 4 out of 5? I have a hard time believing that could happen.
But not easy to do.
We'll have to wait and see, I guess. There's a lot to get to here in the second hour of the program. Major college football news that really could have helped Dirt last year.
Would have been really nice, you know, to have a head out of your ass and think of this is probably the way we should do it. Maybe it would work better, and then oopsies, let's change it after 1 year.
I want to get to Halliburton. I find him so interesting. But I want to read just a couple stats again. For those P1s that have been hanging with us since the start of the show, I thank you for this. So sorry for enduring this. Just want to read a couple stats from last night's game of the Pacers-Knicks. Since 1997-98, teams are 4-1649 when down by 7+ points with less than a minute to go in the fourth quarter of overtime. And the Pacers have 3 of those wins.
Yeah.
Nesmith set history in having 6 three-pointers in the fourth quarter. That's never happened in NBA playoff history. And one more. Sorry, I got all these tabs open. I got so many tabs.
You got a lot of tabs over there.
So many tabs.
You got some incognito tabs, too?
I don't have any incognito tabs.
I'm looking up Sarah Palin's feet. Not a search of yours this morning?
No. I'm kind of curious now.
Now you kind of want to know, don't you?
I'm not really into it. Feet aren't really my thing.
Are they nice feet? Are they well manicured? Are they, you know.
It's not really my thing.
Kind of want to check out her feet now.
This one from the NBA. Halliburton's fourth go-ahead game-winning or game-tying field goal in the last 30 seconds of fourth quarter of overtime. In this playoffs alone, that ties Ray Allen, 4 in 2009, for the most since the 1998 playoffs. Of the 10 most improbable comebacks in playoff history since 1997, the Pacers have 3 of them in this playoff. And one final one here. Teams up 14+ in the final 250 of a playoff fourth quarter of overtime in the play-by-play era were 977-0. They're now 977-1. And the man who really put all of this at the end, Tyrese Halliburton, hits the step back shot that we think in the moment is a three. It bounces off the back iron super high.
Yeah.
It drops down in. That man lives in the moment. He is the ultimate WWE wrestling heel of the NBA. He does the Reggie Miller choke sign pointing at Reggie Miller. We find out it's a two. They go to overtime. They win. And I don't know what the most interesting part of that game was to you. I thought Reggie Miller being on the broadcast and bothering Knick fan.
Yeah.
But then also by the end of the game.
I get why that would piss off Knick fan. If I'm a Knick fan, I'd be livid about that.
Well, I didn't hear all of his broadcast. Yeah. I had the game on, but my father was in town, so we were hanging out and talking. So the game wasn't very loud, but I saw Knicks fans were bothered by him. The end of the game would have bothered me tremendously. I thought he was doing too much leaning into the Pacer stuff.
It was a little bit of that. Then the still image went viral of him pointing at Halliburton, who was doing the choke sign and pointing at him, and they were doing a little thing on the sideline. Like, you can't do that, man.
Usually broadcasts, the NFL, when they have somebody like Aikman on a Cowboy game, I actually find him to be more critical of the Cowboys.
Sometimes
than
he goes harder on them than he does other teams.
Yeah, and so like I'm not saying you need to be anti-Pacer, but it's weird to point at a player. And he was even asked about in the post game by Ali LaForce of just like, what did Reggie tell you about this series? He told me just be a dog, go out and win. And I'm just like, it's kind of weird that the broadcaster's giving the Pacer the advice. What? Tyrese Halliburton as a player. You hate SGA. Where are we out on Halliburton?
Oh, I can't stand him, and I love it. That's perfect for the NBA. He's the exact kind of guy that you need. He's a guy who there's a lot of players in sports who you watch and you don't really elicit a strong opinion on. You just kind of watch him and you either slightly enjoy or slightly don't enjoy, whatever. But it doesn't have an emotional reaction as a fan. Halliburton is not that. He gets you to have an emotional reaction when you watch him. And even in a game like last night, like he's going to be the memorable force of it. He hit that shot. The balls to turn around. He drove the paint.
He didn't want to do that.
And then he turned around and was like, I ran back out towards the three-point line, and then the shot goes in. Like an insane final play, hanging in the air for what felt like an eternity, and then it comes down and goes through, and he does the choke sign. Almost ends up being a premature choke because the Knicks got off to a great start in overtime, and he would have been remembered for the guy who did the choke sign and then lost the game because it was a two and not a three. But even in a night like that where he's the headliner, dude, if they're not hitting a bunch of threes elsewhere on the roster in the fourth quarter, he didn't have a chance to make that shot, but he's the memorable force of it. I love him because I hate him. And when I hate an athlete, it gets a reaction out of me, and it makes me want to watch them more in the hopes that they lose. And so last night was a fantastic night for the NBA.
Here is Tyrese Halliburton on doing the choke sign.
In the moment, I mean, I wasn't like plotting on it or anything. Everybody wanted me to do it like last year at some different point, but it's got to feel right. And it felt right at the time. If I would have known it was a two, I would not have done it. So I think I might have wasted it. If I do it again, then people might say I'm like aura farming. So I'm not, I don't plan on using it again.
He is such an interesting dude. Like one thing that people hate about him is when he does interviews, his voice changes quite a bit.
All the time.
He's kind of like Carl Anthony Towns in that way. There's a video of Kat that came out after they got past Boston. And he randomly dropped a New York accent in the middle of an answer. And it was like, what?
Yeah.
You've never had that accent in your life.
That came out of nowhere.
New York. I used to go to New York. It's like, where'd that come from?
One of the bodegas? What's happening?
And so there's just some part of him. But famously, he's a big wrestling fan.
Yes, he is.
Now, over the weekend, we had this huge fake dilemma of Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And here we go. We got the race war again. We got these rivals. Draymond Green elicits this response. The problem with a Draymond Green is he doesn't win games by scoring.
No.
And Angel Reese doesn't usually win games by scoring.
No.
And so for some people, Angel Reese is a villain. For a lot of people that watch the NBA, Draymond is a big villain, right? He kicks people in the balls and
assaults people on the basketball court.
Assaults people, chokes them, what have you. I think what makes Halliburton a great villain is twofold. He scores.
Yes, he does.
Shoots big shots. Tells you he's got big waifus. And then also, I appreciate him being a villain. I'm with you there. Like, I like when people elicit a response from me.
It's like Trae Young when he's at MSG. Like, it's just fun. It's entertaining, man.
I don't really hate him.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing is I know what he's doing, and I love that he's doing it. Him being the Pacer that's trying to imitate Reggie Miller at MSG That's just something that I want.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this, it's great that he leans into it, but the part about his game that I can't get over is how it's kind of ugly. Like, the way he dribbles, he doesn't tell me, when I watch him play, I don't think that's a top 10 dribbler in the NBA.
He doesn't jump when he shoots.
When he shoots, it's like,
he's got like a 1-inch vertical, man. Doesn't even get off the ground.
It works.
It works.
It works for his game.
It's like the guy with the ugly baseball swing, and you're like, how is he doing this? But he finds a way to do it.
Jay Buhner, you're just standing there. Step in. Oh, man, you don't run.
Not everybody's got a griffy motion and a griffy swing. Somebody's got to do it ugly.
He's perfect for this series, and I am just grateful that that happened, because one, I got to watch something I've never seen happen in my life.
In that building against that team, with those two teams playing,
with all of
the Reggie Miller history, like, I can feel how I want about Reggie being on the TNT call, and if I were a Knicks fan, that would legitimately piss me off.
Was he pretty pro-pacer most of the broadcast?
It wasn't that bad. It's just the optics of it, and I know that he can't control that. You're not going to kick off your top commentator for the conference finals. I get it, but the pointing at Halliburton stuff was, like, it was that made it even worse.
Don't point back.
Like, when the choke happened and Van Gundy was talking about it, like, ooh, Reggie's doing the choke. And Reggie's, like, laughing
Reggie
in the background.
Reggie tried to act like he didn't see it.
Like, he goes, what? Oh, like, he didn't even know what's going on. Like, the optics of it aren't great. But it was the fact that it was those two teams. We know how they feel about each other. A revisited rivalry. The memory of Miller doing that to the Knicks and doing the choke to Spike Lee. You could not have asked for a better start to that series. That was the series that I think we were all a little bit more excited for, in hopes that it was going to be kind of a knockout, drag-out fight for seven games.
Feels that way, doesn't it?
Feels like it will be that way. Lived up to the hype in game one. That was a phenomenal night of basketball.
Are you with me? Do you think his game is pretty?
No. That's why it's so frustrating to watch him, because you're like, how is he getting away with this?
Even he lost, so he's asked in the post game the step back three. He said he didn't want to shoot. He was going for the two.
Yes.
The ball got kind of jumbled. Bridges was on him, and so his instincts were just recover, retreat.
Get some space.
Yeah, even that play, I'm like, he dribbles backwards in a way that, like, how does nobody steal the ball from
him? Yes, it just doesn't compute.
But he gets it, and then he shoots it, and it bounces a mile high, and it drops straight in. I didn't know who the biggest loser was. I think ultimately I would vote the Knicks for blowing that game. Reggie Miller, the New York Knicks, or my buddy Ray, who put $10 on a trifecta bet. He was one rebound or 1 point or one assist away from a $10 bet hitting $400.
Ooh.
And he's a Knicks fan.
Ooh, double whammy. Ouch!
That's a drop kick.
That hurts, man. It's funny, as a fan of an NBA team and being in an NBA city, I always put myself in there. Like, we haven't won a game in the conference finals in a quarter century, so that kind of sucks. And watching these teams, a lot of my anger just comes from a point of jealousy of, like, why can't I have that?
Right.
Why can't I enjoy this?
Right.
And just thinking to myself, what would morning radio the next day look like on either side of that? And the heartbreak and despair that would be on the losing side of, did we just blow a chance to win this series? You don't know how the rest of it's going to go, but that's where your mind immediately goes. And in Indiana, I mean, you're popping bottles of champagne doing radio the next morning.
Good stuff in the conference finals. Let's go to the other series, Minnesota. Is it do or die for them? Ben Beacon will join us coming up next of Locked On Wolves, an early ticker on the Fan.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is brought to you by Pelican Brewing, independently brewing on the Oregon coast since 1996. Discover even more flavors from your local coast with Pelican's new craft sodas. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
Looking forward to those sodas coming out. Daily Ticker presented by our great friends at Pelican Brewing Company. With the turn of the warmer weather, Pelican Brewing brings back its summer seasonal beer, Pelicano, available in clear glass bottles as refreshment you can see. Excited to have our guest on, a friend of the show at this point. When you come on multiple times, you're a friend of the program, Ben Beacon of the Locked On Wolves podcast. Ben, good morning. Thanks for hopping on with us out here in Portland. Gotta say, I know Ann Edwards is a feel-out process guy. He did it in the Warriors in game one. Very disappointed. It's one thing to feel out the process. It's another to be passive and not aggressive whatsoever the whole game. What was your read on Ann Edwards as the Wolves lose game one?
Yeah, happy to be on. Happy to be with you guys again. It certainly wasn't Ant's best game. I think it was, I don't know. It wasn't his worst game of the playoffs either. You know, I think there were a couple games mixed in there in the first two series that were similar but less efficient even. I think feeling it out is probably the right way to put it. And certainly when SGA and the Thunder went on their run kind of starting mid third quarter, the Wolves were still up by like four with like 5 minutes left in the third quarter. So that is when it really kind of turned from he's feeling it out, this is fine, like he's kind of biding his time, to wait a minute, now, you know, you can't stop this avalanche that OKC is going on. And that's where it kind of flipped to maybe he was a little passive. And OKC never, I mean, they were aggressive in guarding Ant, but they didn't like fully blitz him as much as some teams have. And, you know, they certainly shaded his defense towards him, as every team does. And OKC's defense is obviously the best in the league by far. So, yeah, I think I would look for him to try and get downhill more tonight in game two. And that's going to be super important to the Wolves offense. He also only had 3 assists, and like he can get away with only shooting 13 times, you know, scoring 18 points if he has 9, 10, 11 assists, but that wasn't the case. He had 3 assists, 4 turnovers. So certainly the aggressiveness will go up from Ant. In fact, he even said post game, he was looking at the stat sheet. He was like, I only shot the ball 13 times. You know, I need to shoot more. And so he knows, and you're right. You can't afford to throw one away, and it is disappointing. But the Wolves have had one of these in every series. The difference is OKC is by far the best opponent they've faced. And so hopefully the Wolves understand, like, hey, we can't afford to have another one of these.
Yeah, it seems like a big game tonight. Do you hate SGA as much as I do?
That's a tough question to answer. I certainly believe he deserves the MVP award. If that doesn't answer your question, but yeah. I certainly believe he deserves the MVP. I certainly also believe, and I said this on Lockdown Wolves, I think every day this week, that he is aesthetically difficult to watch.
Thank you. There you go.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, the foul hunting is a little annoying. He does tend to get a whistle that it seems like not every player gets in the playoffs, especially the way the physicality has been gauged throughout all these series so far. I'm curious, what is the biggest adjustment in your mind, Ben, between what they didn't do well enough in game one or what they need to change and have to change in game two?
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively, I do think they just need to be well, the first half was actually pretty good. I mean, they held OKC to 44 points in the first half. So, and I know the Thunder were like, we just missed layups and stuff. But, like, the Wolves were making it difficult on them. Like, Rudy was good at the rim. The point of attack defense was good. But then in the second half, it was straight line drive after straight line drive, and the Wolves just couldn't stay in front. And I think the way they played in the first half was fine. Defensively, I don't necessarily think there's much of an adjustment other than play better, like stay in front of guys on the perimeter. What they can do, break glass in case of emergency, is what they did. There was the last regular season matchup between these two teams. The Wolves were down 24 points in the fourth quarter, and Ant tweaked something, and they put it on the bench, and it looked like they were going to mail it in. But then they decided to just be super aggressive with blitzing Shea Gilgeous-Alexander as soon as he crossed the timeline. And they literally played 3-on-4, and forced somebody else to beat them with threes, and they couldn't. And the Wolves came back and won that game in overtime against OKC after being down 24 in the fourth. So that is a fallback, but that's a really, truly a desperation move. So if the Wolves get down, say, double figures in this game, down 1-0 in the series, maybe they do that. On the other side, they just have to make open threes. They had like 12, 13, 14 wide open corner threes. The Thunder will give you corner threes. The Wolves just need to make them, and they shot like 25% or something on threes in this game, or 29%. And they just need to make the open ones, and we're talking about a game that seriously, it will be close, and they'll have a chance to win at the end.
Yeah, no doubt about that. What do you make of the Gobert matchup and only playing 21 minutes and how he fits in this series?
Yeah, a little bit of that was foul trouble. He got 2 fouls in the first minute and a half, and then in the third quarter after Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren both got into some foul trouble, the Wolves countered by matching how small OKC was. I don't know that that was the right call by Chris Finch. And I think if that were to happen again, he may just stay big and be like, hey, look, we're giving up something offensively. I think part of it was the Wolves were struggling to score. And so Finch was like, all right, they're going to be small. Our best offensive lineup is Naz Reid at the 5 and Julius Randle at the 4. So we'll match them. We'll be small and we'll have more offense on the floor. I think ultimately Rudy will be more important in the series than he was in game one, or will play a bigger role because OKC wants to play with Chet and Hartenstein on the floor if they can. So I do think Rudy will play a bigger role. I think that this game one was he was, you know, his impact was mitigated a little bit more than it will be moving forward.
It kind of feels blasphemous, Ben. Ben Beacon of Locked On Wolves is joining us here, our good friend. He's getting ready for game two. It's a big night in Minnesota and Minneapolis as they get ready to see if the Wolves can tie this series at OKC. I'm just curious, Julius Randle, the emergence of Julius Randle has been pretty extraordinary. He's had this playoff reputation, though not like he had a lot of playoff experience, but he had one kind of coming into the playoffs of not a big game performer. He has been stellar. He was their best player in game one. What do you attribute the difference or just the way that he's played so far in these playoffs? What's different, if anything, that has stuck out to you from what it was in the regular season where they struggled so much early to what it is right now?
Yeah, I think he's been appropriately aggressive, if that makes sense, in the sense that he's not forcing things, right? Like in the regular season, it was kind of a little bit of my turn, your turn. Like, hey, I'm a star too. I've been all NBA. I've been an all-star. Like, and I'm not faulting Julius. I'm not calling him selfish or anything like that. I think it was just he was trying to find his spot in the pecking order and wanted to get his possessions. And now I think he's realized Ant draws so much attention that he's going to be able to attack mismatches. And he did that in the first two rounds against the Lakers and Warriors, where like guys would or teams would put two guys on Ant, and then there'd be one guy, sometimes an undersized guy. Sometimes it was just, you know, the defense is in rotation, and so somebody's late sliding over to guard Randle. And Julius realized, like, hey, I could just attack these, you know, I could attack. He's starting to shoot threes much better too, so I can attack these closeouts. I can just shoot over these guys if they're going to give me space. I'm not going to see doubles. And so I think he's been picking his spots. And then also when teams would bring late help, or if he had a bigger defender on him, he also has been assisting really well in the playoffs. He's always been a good playmaker, but the decision-making has been really solid. And in the first half, he had 20 points against OKC in game one. And then in the second half, he only had 8, and he turned the ball over. I think of his 5 turnovers, at least 3 of them were in the second half. And he started to turn his back to the basket, and the Thunder started to, you know, swarm as they do. And that's where he saw some trouble, is where they would bring a second guy. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't aware of that, and he wasn't making that quick decision. So I think as long as he's making the quick decision, oftentimes that's going to be the right decision against the Thunder instead of letting them swarm you. And yeah, he's going to be huge in the series just because of the amount of attention that Ant draws.
Ben, quick prediction. Do you think the Wolves tie it tonight? I think if they lose, I have a lot of respect for Minnesota and Edwards. I think the series is over. I just don't know if they can beat that team 4 out of 5 games. What's your prediction for tonight?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I agree with you. I think they win tonight, though. I do. I think if the game plays out similarly, I don't know how much adjusting OKC is going to do. They just won by 26. If they play the same way, I think Minnesota makes a few more threes. I think Ant is a little more aggressive, and I think the Wolves will feel the same urgency you just mentioned. They know they've got to win, and then they'll have some momentum going back to Minnesota for games 3 and 4. The Wolves have been a good road team all season. I know OKC's outstanding at home, but the Wolves aren't going to get swept, and they know they need this game. This is a game I think the Wolves can pull out. And so I'm picking Minnesota tonight.
There we go. Great stuff. Ben Beacon, find his great work on YouTube. Find the podcast Locked On Wolves. Does a great job. He's a good friend of the program. Thanks so much for the time this morning, Ben. We always appreciate it. Enjoy tonight's game, too, and hopefully we can catch up with you down the road in this Minnesota series.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me.
All right. There we go. Great stuff from Ben Beacon of the Locked On Wolves Game 2, Oklahoma City and Minnesota, and that is the Daily Ticker. It's presented by Pelican Brewing Company. With the return of warmer weather, Pelican Brewing brings back its summer seasonal beer, Pelicano, available in clear glass bottles. It's refreshment you can see. Also got some sodas coming out. I'm really excited to try the cream soda.
Can't wait. Very excited about that.
Somebody had said cream soda, underrated, but also nobody goes out of the way to buy it, but it's one of those underrated because when you do get one, you go, man, this is delicious.
Yeah, it's a really good way to and describe it.
That's perfect.
I never seek it out, but whenever I have one, I'm like, yeah, it's good.
Especially if it's done well.
Yeah.
If it's really done well.
Yeah. Well, Pelican, you know what they do.
They do things well.
They do it well.
That should be their new tagline, not born at the beach. They do it well.
We're born at the beach. We do it well.
We do it well.
Speaking of doing it well, hopefully we can do the rest of the show well. We have a lot to get to. College football news that really would have helped Dirt had it happened last year.
Would have been cool, man.
You know, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
You know, don't be down 34-0.
Hey. We wouldn't have been against these teams, damn it. Well, we beat one of them.
You did play Mike Myers in one game last year, and he had a pretty good game.
Hey, who won? Who won? Yeah, who won the game?
You're not wrong there, right, buddy. So we'll get to that. We'll tell you what that is. We got odds and ends. We got NBA playoff basketball, Dirt and Sprague. We got a lot more to get into, and we'll do it next on The Fan. Comes
up. Well, we got a funny text from a Knicks fan that I want to get to coming up top of the hour, and we'll connect it back locally.
I've never gone so back and forth on a team quite like I have with the Knicks, where I genuinely love watching them play. I like those players. The Garden is great when it's buzzing.
All the celebrities there, courtside.
The difference between, you know, the New York Knicks and Madison Square Garden is to me, I had this thought watching that game when they were up and it wasn't a fight at that point. I just look around and I'm seeing Larry David. I'm seeing David Zaslav. I'm seeing Tracy Morgan. I'm seeing Jadakiss the rapper. I'm seeing Ben Stiller. You're seeing Timothée Chalamet. Timotei, I should say.
Timotei!
Apologies to the chosen one. But I'm seeing all these celebrities, and the thought comes through my head, them in L.A., the Lakers tend to get the celebrities, right? Will Ferrell, he's at the game.
Yeah, Jack sitting courtside.
Right.
Yeah.
But most of them in L.A., it's like, good job, basketball. I'm cool. I'm in Los Angeles. New York might be the last beacon of pro sports in this country that can get the combination of from the very top of the arena, the person that scraped together every dime they could afford to get in that building, to the very bottom front row of the multi-hundred millionaires that exist, it might be the last venue where nobody is better than the other, and there's no difference between the person sitting on the court and the person at the very top of the arena.
Yeah, there's the vibe at Laker games where it's a social outing. It's a thing to do, to be seen. Hey, I'm here, I'm courtside.
Ooh, there's the Kardashians.
Wow, they're here again.
And Timotei's like, hey, you want to come with me to this Knicks game? You better be all in on the Knicks.
You got to be a dog sitting courtside.
It's kind of a beacon of hope of like, doesn't matter your financial status, you better be a legit fan in that city, in that arena.
Yeah.
Or they're going to hate you, whereas in like L.A., it's like passive, like, I'm going to go sailing tomorrow.
I'm with you on that. That's a good takeaway.
It's an everyman building. Yeah. Doesn't matter
even the
who
riches,
you are.
Even the rich folk down courtside. John Hamm like stole a ball from Halliburton when it went out of bounds last night. He was yelling at the official like, hey! They put the camera on Hamm. He's like winking. Like, yeah, that's right. I grabbed that ball. I did that play. We did have a little bit of college football news. The NFL tried to step into this water a couple days ago. We yelled at each other for 20 minutes about it. And then they were like, JK, we don't want to do anything about it. We're going to keep our same playoff format. And college football thought, hey, here's our moment to shine. We love changing our playoff format every 6 weeks, baby. What are we going to cook up next? I don't know. But we have a change this morning, according to Ross Dellinger. Sure would have been nice to have this last year. Thanks, college football. I think all of us all year were screaming, you know, the whole conference champion, top four seed guaranteed bye thing doesn't really make a lot of sense, depending on what conference you end up winning.
Especially when you included the group of five.
Like Boise State getting a first round bye. Cool. They are changing that now, and it will be a straight seeded model for this year's college football playoff. They're still working out the 16 that they're going to go to. All that nonsense is still around the corner. But at least in the short term for next year, it will no longer be top four seeds have to be conference champions. If you win your conference championship, you are guaranteed a spot in the playoff, and then you will be ranked based on how the committee ranks you.
I would like to congratulate, first and foremost, the SEC and the Big Ten. They will be in the top four forever.
Thank you. The ACC, the Big 12,
you stand no chance. You will never get a bye.
Last year for the playoff, this is how it would have gone.
Yeah.
Your first round byes, Oregon would have been the one seed, number one.
They would have played the winner of Boise State, Indiana, by
Boise
the way.
Boise State, Indiana.
Would have won a playoff game.
Would have been the 8-9. Your number two seed would have been Georgia. They would have gotten a first round bye.
Who would they have played?
They would have played the winner of Tennessee-SMU.
They would have won.
Probably won. Yeah. Your three seed would have been Texas, the loser of the SEC title game.
Yep.
They would have played the winner of Ohio State or Arizona State.
Okay.
Ohio State would have been on the other side of the bracket.
Yeah.
And your number four seed would have been your Big Ten champion loser, Penn State. They would have played the winner of Notre Dame or Clemson.
I just love that in this era of the Dan Lanning-led Oregon program, until they do it, every year it's going to be like, can that one team of that season be on the opposite side?
Can we just get them over there? Keep them over there and hope somebody gets hurt.
Last year it was Ohio State. We wouldn't play them for a long time. This year it could be Texas. Yeah. Next year it could be Georgia. Like, it's just going to keep going until you finally ever win one of those. Look, we kind of felt like this was going to happen.
Yeah.
All four of those bye teams lost. The time off thing, I still think, is a problem. They need to fix the calendar. I agreed with Dan Lanning's interview on Bussin' with the Boys of like, college football should be wrapping up at the beginning of the new year.
End the year at the beginning of December, launch right into the playoffs. That gives the teams with a bye a benefit of you get one week off only. Everybody else goes and plays, and then you're back at it the next week. There's no reason you can't wrap this up the first week of January.
I agreed 100% with that. I think they need to change that ASAP. That should be on the docket for the next thing they need to change.
And everybody playing week zero. Why? We were just doing that the other day because there's Hood to Coast or something going on that weekend. And I was like, what games are on that weekend? I looked it up. There's like four. None of them are that good. Everybody playing week zero. Move it up a week.
Well, that would hurt me because I'm doing Hood to Coast, so I don't know how many more years I'll do it. I don't know. But the thing about that is, like, I like that they're going to do it this way. The only problem I'm going to have is when the one-loss Big Ten team that didn't win the conference championship gets the bye over the maybe one or two-loss Big 12 conference winner.
Sure. You got to remember, though, this is only for a year. Because then they're changing it again next year.
Thanks for the reminder. At this point, I can't keep up.
You can't even keep up. I know.
I was reading a Dellinger piece over the weekend.
They're going to change it next year.
And my wife goes, oh, what are you reading about? I'm like, I'm so tired. I don't know. I honestly don't know how media or fans do this anymore. I am so... Okay, I'm going to say this, and I mean no disrespect. He is a friend of the program. I would love to have him on any time to talk the business side. Ross Dellinger's great. He does a great job.
He does.
Can I just get that out in the front?
That is out there.
Ross Dellinger
in the world
is doing his job really well.
He's a phenomenal journalist.
However, I have had it up to here with the constant,
the NCAA is debating internally if they're going to give the power. The Big Ten representatives are arguing over the share percentages.
I hate reading about this stuff. I'm tired. I can't keep up. You have to remind me constantly.
Oh, even I've checked Sprague, out
don't,
from it.
Don't forget, next year it's this, this, and this. And I'm like, sorry, I keep forgetting. The conferences have been destroyed. The bye weeks are all different. No schedules make sense. I can't keep up with this. How is anybody? It's the most boring stuff to read, too. Internally, the documents show the NCAA set. I just piss off already. I'm so tired of it. It's not fun to read. You like reading the legalities of your real estate deals? That's how this feels like to me. Can you sign these 95 documents to buy the house?
Click, click, click.
Did you read any of them?
No.
We'll figure it out as we go. I don't want to read this anymore. I'm so tired.
We famously did that with a contract one time, and we had a big wig who used to work with us. We said, you know, you guys should really read your contracts next time you sign. We said, oh, that's a good piece of advice.
I remember, like, wanting to respond, why?
Why?
I didn't get what I wanted. Yeah. I'm super underpaid. Why would I read it?
I got no control anyways. Yeah, it's only for a year, because next year we will have the 16-team playoff, and then you're going to have your four at-larges for the Big Ten, four at-larges for the SEC, two for the Big 12, two for the ACC. A Notre Dame, if you have a heartbeat, and then your group of five.
Now, that's concrete, the 16.
It's not concrete, but it's going to happen.
Well, because the piece I was telling you I was reading was, I believe internally the ACC is starting to get kind of pissed about this idea, and so they might be teaming up with the Big 12 to say, hey.
Sure they are.
Not so fast.
You got no control.
And then I kind of thought that.
Why don't you sit at the kids' table, accept your lot in life, okay? This is Big Dirt now talking, all right? Geez. You stay down there in the living room, kids' table. We're going to
just sprinkle a few.
We're going to discuss what the playoff format will look like, and then there you go.
Should you have a seat at the big boy table if you're down 34-0?
We won the big boy conference. There's two big conferences, and we won one of them, bitch. And we beat that team in the regular season, and we beat Penn State, too.
Yeah,
damn it.
When it matters.
Shut your mouth. You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Not talking about this.
No.
Would have been nice to have that format last year. Wouldn't have been down 34-0 to Indiana or Boise State.
Do people
that
like, much you guys like reading this stuff?
No, I don't like reading it. This isn't like a hypothetical thing. This is at least what it's going to be for a year.
Well,
so
I'm not
going to
read the story. I have the information. I'm good.
This is real change that's actually going to happen, and then it'll be for a year. And then they'll go to another format a year from now.
My dad was in town yesterday. And he would not shut up about ChatGPT. He's an obvious boomer that's just like, I made a steak perfectly thanks to ChatGPT.
Oh, it told him how to make a steak.
He's like, I can't wait to meet Gemini. It's going to be my best friend. No. No, you're going the wrong way.
He's embracing technology.
Well, you know,
a lot of olds don't embrace technology. They go the other way.
I am proud of him for that, but he's like way too friendly to the AI. It's like not good at all. You are my AI.
I'm your AI guy.
When Ross Dellinger writes an article, I'm going to go, Dirt, translate for me.
Translate this. This is what's going to happen.
Because I think you like reading about this.
It's funny. My folks are the exact opposite. Sometimes I'll have conversations with my parents about how to get somewhere, and they will still explain directions to me like it's 1997.
Oh, go down.
So you're gonna go up here. You're gonna take a left, and then after you take that left, you're gonna want to get in the right. And it's like, do you understand that GPS exists, and I can plug it into my phone.
I just need an address.
And then there's a speaker on my phone that tells me, and now I'm going, Bill Cosby, get in the right lane and take a turn at the light.
I mean, that's the voice you want.
Give me the Pudding Pops. The college football's going to 12. There you go. New format coming. And it's going to be seated straight. No, I also did see last note on this, by the way, and then we'll go on.
All the voices.
I know. I don't know why I went that way. It's one of the few impersonations that I can do.
Unfortunately.
I'm not very good at those. You're much better, and that's one of the few I got in my back pocket. There's a bigger financial compensation, I think, for playoff teams that win their conference championship.
That will not change.
And that is not changing.
They'll still get the big
check. So the ACC champ, the Big 12, I think it's like $8 million or something. So you're still going to get, even if you don't get a first-round bye in this new format. So there you go. There's your news. Out of the college football world, I have translated it for you.
Every year that goes by with that dumb sport that we all love passionately, I'm like every other person. Like Josh Pate's done this a million times of, who is deciding this stuff? Because every year they're
nobody
stupid,
in charge.
And then they learn how they were stupid, and then they make the change.
They do.
We could have told you last year this was the way to do it.
Hey, are you sure you want to give the first seeds to, or the top four seeds to conference champions, no matter what conference they're from? Are you sure that's what you want to do? What happens if one of those is the Mountain West? Are you going to be happy about that? I think we all said in December, too, once Boise State got that spot, I can guarantee you this will never happen again. And all the big conferences were like, over my dead body is Boise State going to get a first-round bye.
Yep.
Put up a great fight against Penn State. They were a hell of a team last year, but yeah, changes on the way. Let's get to a ranking that definitely won't be controversial. That is next. We'll dive back into the Eastern Conference Finals coming up top of the hour. Back after this on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure? Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. You can find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com. Who would this person be to the Blazers? We'll get to that coming up at the top of the hour.
I got an underrated answer for that question.
Ooh, I like that. It's a dirty tease on two different angles. Somebody texting into the Fan text line, 503-864-6326. That's how you can interact with us. You gents are missing why the NCAA does not start the college football playoffs in early December, and that's academic finals. As a former D1 football player, that time is essential for finals.
I agree with that former player.
Thank you
for that. That's a very good point.
I think the argument would be once the House settlement goes through, are you even a student anymore in their minds? I think you're already trending in that direction, but we are on the brink of universities directly paying their football players, well, all athletes, but primarily their football players. And I think that's the counter argument of like, you're an employee essentially. Now you're not an employee, but you kind of are an employee. You're getting paid.
I mean, they're employees.
So let's start this playoff in a timeline that matters for us and not for you. You want to take classes in the spring. You want to take classes in the winter. Like, go ahead, man. Start your term in January. You'll be fine. But I think that would be their argument.
Yeah, I saw a report, maybe it was 2 days ago, that was basically like the NCAA has told all the conferences, power conferences, you're in charge of all this stuff now.
Yeah, there's some weird,
like, what are you doing? Are you...
They don't exist anymore, essentially.
Yeah, it's kind of what it seemed like they were doing.
You want to get into the weeds on stuff right now. It's not necessarily the playoff stuff, but the latest reporting on, they have this new commission that's been created that basically will allow the policing of everything that's going on with the pay structure under the House settlement.
Now, you're talking about the Saban one? The presidential commission?
No. That commission's totally different.
Because that one might not exist.
This is essentially the governing body that is not the NCAA, but it's a new created governing body.
Gotcha.
And the power conferences are trying to get their member institutions to say, you will abide by this governing body and you will not file lawsuits. You will not, like, we're not going to see any of this sort of legal stuff over the paying of players. You will abide by the House settlement. And there are schools who are telling their conferences point blank, double birds. we'll do whatever the hell we want. And it's now gotten to the point behind the scenes where conference commissioners are privately threatening to kick universities out of their conference. This is going on in the SEC right now with Tennessee and Vanderbilt. They just passed a law in the state of Tennessee, so Vanderbilt's just kind of along for the ride for it, where essentially it tells them they can do whatever the hell they want with NIL. And so they're telling the SEC, dude, pound sand. We got state law that says we can do whatever the hell we want.
State rights.
If we want to file a lawsuit, we'll file a lawsuit. And mm-hmm. the SEC privately is like, we'll kick your ass out of the SEC.
Right.
And Tennessee's saying, no, you won't. And so they probably won't, but that's the next can of worms that you're going to open up. The joys of college athletics. I saw this ranking yesterday. Nothing beats a good quarterback ranking in the NFL. Nothing gets the people going.
We got a new top 10?
We got a Pro Football Focus 1 through 32 ranking of NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Let's see the most egregious in the top five. Their order. Pat Mahomes, shocker.
The top five is going to be egregious? There's no way
that's
true.
An egregious name in the top five or order?
Here's not a chance.
Okay, so Pat Mahomes, one.
Okay.
Joe Burrow, two.
Is this in order?
This is in order.
Okay, so
one, two, okay. is Burrow. Three is Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
Four is Josh Allen.
Duh.
You know, had a pretty good year. Maybe should be higher than four. Are we upset that he's not three, two?
Got engaged to a very talented, beautiful woman, and he won the MVP.
What a year. He had a hell of a year. Jalen Hurts, five.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of your top 10 goes as follows. Jaden Daniels, 6.
Okay.
Matt Stafford, 7.
Yep.
Justin Herbert, 8.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Goff, 9.
Mm-hmm.
Geno Smith, 10.
I mean, this is what we tend to do with a top 10 list, is if you want to argue about 5 on that list, Hurts.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm not going to be Mr. Anti and outraged guy. I'll just say simply, for some reason, our sports culture, and I blame television for this, has gotten our mindsets into, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got that ring. Now, you could say, well, Burrow doesn't have a ring and Allen doesn't have a ring. Yeah, but those are like the elite of skill. When you get past those four, you kind of start playing that game. I think people do. Whether that's fair or not, that's an irrelevant topic. That's why he gets into the top five.
Sure.
You mentioned it the other day. He's never had a 4,000-yard passing season.
Never thrown 25 touchdowns in a season.
Never thrown 25, but he's pushed that tush.
He's got 23.
That tush has been pushed.
And his tush is getting pushed.
And so he scores, and, you know, he's a class act, good franchise quarterback, I think, to have. You can debate 5 through 10, the order of it. You can say Justin Herbert this, Jalen Hurts that. But people would say, win a playoff game, show up in a playoff game, versus Hurts has performed well in some playoff games.
No doubt about that.
I think there's always room for debate between 5 and 15.
How dare you bring nuance to this conversation? How dare you?
So I don't really actually have a problem with that list.
Okay, who's the most egregious outside the top 10? Who's the most egregious leave off the top 10 list? 11 was Brock Purdy.
Okay.
12, Jordan Love. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. I was told last year he was top 5. What happened?
I was told last year he was top 3.
Baker Mayfield, 13.
Baker's a little disrespected.
I feel like Baker's getting disrespected a bit, right?
Be a top 10 guy.
CJ Stroud, 14.
That's kind of wild.
From where he was last year, he won a playoff game.
I know.
His offensive line was terrible.
He had no receivers.
No healthy wide receivers, and they still won a playoff game.
I'm going to say Stroud's the most egregious. Yeah, okay. Because look,
who are we booting out of the top 10? Geno Smith being top 10 was pretty eye-opening to me.
You could move either
Geno
of those
has
guys.
So much respect from a lot of analytics people, a lot of pundits in the NFL. He certainly could be moved out of the top 10. You will disagree with this? And maybe Swag will as well, given the tie to it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I feel like this year is a massive year for your boy. Talk about moving in and out of the top 10. Like, we all, I think us three universally and other people that support him see the stuff, and we all agree. But there's now 2 playoff games, 1 blown lead, 1 very bad performance where you got to do something this year. It cannot be another get to the wild card, lose the first game, not be that great. That's a name that I think people will start throwing out of that and get mad when he's thrown in it.
He's going to be pissed when he wins the Super Bowl this year. If Seahawks fans are wondering where their new quarterback ranks,
Sam Darnold, the $100 million man.
Sam Darnold, the $100 million man. Take a guess. Take a stab at it. 1 through 32. Where does Sam Darnold rank?
19. 16.
19 and 16. You are both drastically incorrect.
Damn it.
Sam Darnold on this ranking, according to Pro Football Focus, NFL quarterbacks, 1 through 32, prospective starters.
Okay.
26th in the NFL. Wow. He is behind.
Yeah.
Wait for it. Cam Ward, 25.
I mean, Cam Ward's the truth.
Caleb Williams, 24.
Oh, that's a hot take.
Michael Penix, 23.
I mean, my guy Penix.
Drake May, 22.
You would take all those guys over him.
J.J. McCarthy, 21.
I think you'd take all five of those quarterbacks over
him. J.J. McCarthy's never played a snap.
Rookie scale deal.
Bryce Young, number 20.
I mean, people love Bryce Young right now for some reason. Not me, but people do.
Look, you know how I feel
about
my boy.
Would you take those five quarterbacks prior to Bryce Young over Sammy D? If I said you got a franchise to start right now.
I couldn't do it. I've never seen some of them play. I've never seen J.J. McCarthy take a snap.
Have you seen those practice spirals that Penix has been throwing in camps?
Penix played last year. I know that. Cam Ward has never played a snap. J.J. McCarthy's never played a snap. Drake May was fine last year. I'm not out on him. I'm not like, why? What metric would there be outside if he was highly rated coming out of college, which Sam Darnold also was?
Yeah.
Is there to say that Drake May's better than Sam Darnold?
How much he's making per year? That's the equation, unfortunately.
Yeah, the financials of it are valid. I saw that. I was like, wait. What?
Who would you cut out of a top 10 there?
Geno Smith would be my first
Anybody
cut.
Else? Because I think Baker and Stroud have arguments to be made.
I think Baker's got a great argument. I think Stroud's got a great argument. Outside of that, there's nobody else that I'm really losing sleep over being in the top 10. I wouldn't have been that high on Jalen Hurts, but that's a difference of opinion. He's great in big games.
Would he be in your top 10? Because I feel like he's borderline. Hasn't been.
He's the debatable one. You know how I feel about quarterbacks. I feel like it's top four and then everybody else.
It's a week-to-week thing. Yeah,
yes,
largely.
Everybody else right. can, depending on who's healthy and who's like, you want to bring up winning. Stafford just won a Super Bowl 3 years ago.
He's rightfully
Why isn't he higher than seven? Why isn't he hired Jaden Daniels?
I think it's the age.
Yeah, could be.
And I think if you would have done this a year ago, 2 years ago, he is that fifth player.
Yeah. So nothing like a good NFL quarterback ranking. That was according to Pro Football Focus. They came out of that last.
I disagree with you. I think those five quarterbacks you would take if you were starting a franchise over Sammy D.
Over Sammy D.
30 Sammy D for 30. What? 35. What is he getting?
Somewhere in that range. Yeah.
35, 40, whatever that number is. Or Cam Ward, Drake May.
J.J. McCarthy.
Penix McCarthy, like, making what per year?
Yeah.
I think we gotta roll that way.
Contract's a part of it, for sure. We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. How about one radio host stepping in it a little bit? We'll talk about that. Let's start, though, with who would this person be for the Blazers as my voice cracks going to the final hour, because last night was heartbreaking for this fan base. We'll talk about that to start the final hour next on The Fan.